From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. Ahead, SMU returns to the NCAA tournament after a 22-year absence. We'll begin, though, with the so-called Sanctuary Cities Bill on today's agenda at the state capitol. The measure would not allow Texas cities to block local law enforcement from asking for someone's immigration status. KUT's Veronica Zaragovia reports.
State Senator Charles Perry, the bill's author, said in a statement on Facebook that his measure is simple. Quote, cities cannot pick and choose the laws they want to enforce. Public safety, not political correctness, should be the priority. End quote. He later mentions crime in Texas allegedly tied to illegal immigration. But James McLaughlin says it would be difficult for law enforcement to enforce this bill. McLaughlin is the executive director of the Texas Police Chiefs Association.
Who do you ask for status? Do you ask everybody that you stop? Or do you profile people based on suspicion? Again, it's not that easy.
This morning, senators in the Veteran Affairs and Military Installations Committee will also take up a border security bill that includes the hiring of DPS troopers and penalties for smuggling. Veronica Zaragovia, KUT News.
New data from the U.S. Department of Education is out on how schools issue suspensions to keep order in the classroom, and it can vary pretty widely. In the Fort Worth School District, 40% of black high school boys were suspended from school during the 2011-12 school year, compared to only 14% of white high school boys. Black high school boys weren't pulled out of Dallas schools nearly as much, 28%. Still high, though, compared to 11% of whites. Denton High Schools only suspended 17% of black boys versus 5% of whites.
We have repeatedly found that the largest number of offenses and suspensions are for minor offenses. And policies and practices at the school level are often what are driving suspension rates high.
Dan Lawson heads the Center for Civil Rights Remedies at UCLA and studies this disparity in school discipline. He said principals have wide discretion over whether to suspend a student. Using it wisely could help kids graduate on time and stay out of the criminal justice system.
When you have the sort of get tough on kids kind of mentality, that also predicts having larger racial disparities. So not just greater use of suspensions, but larger disparities in their use.
Texas educators have tried to cut down on suspensions for things like disruptive behavior, truancy, and nonviolent offenses in the last few years. Since the 2009-10 school year, suspensions in Dallas ISD have fallen 12 percentage points, with a large reduction in suspension of black students. Coconut oil, rather, has been said to be great for cooking, weight loss, skin care, illness, you name it. But whether it lives up to those claims is a different story. Sharon Cox is a dietitian with Parkland Hospital System, and she separates fact from fiction in our consumer health series, Vital Signs.
It's a food source for many people, but also the traditional medicine part has been used by several cultures as a cure-all for everything from fever to dysentery. Helps reduce or kill bacteria, fungus, viral. You know, it has been around.
As an addition to the diet, does it really add anything of value to it?
It would add a large source of calories and also saturated fat, which we don't want to have a large number or percent of saturated fat because that increases our cholesterol level, which increases the risk for coronary artery disease.
On the other hand, it's being promoted as good for treating anything from acne to Alzheimer's even. Is there any evidence backing any of that you are aware of?
Not currently. With coconut oil or any claims that you would get from a dietary supplement, you would have to know the dose of it, you know, similar to your prescription medicine. Do you take a teaspoon every day or a tablespoon? How much of it, how long would you need to take for it to help, you know, with Alzheimer or, you know, kill a, say you have a bacterial infection, how much and how long would you need to take it?
And there's no information about that at
this
point. There
is no scientific research or evidence-based information now.
Sure. Is there any dietary value to it at all?
Yes, it's a very dense source of calories again. And for some that have problems with weight, that are losing weight and absorbing certain foods or calories, it would provide them with a good source of calories.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, the saturated fat in coconut oil and any saturated fat has lauric acid in it. But again, you would need to know the amount to take to get that benefit from the lauric acid.
What does lauric acid do for you?
It's what we call a medium-chain triglyceride, and it just provides, again, a source of energy or calories, but it also has been researched and found to help increase your good cholesterol, the HDL, but also it increases your LDL, the bad cholesterol.
Ah, okay.
If you wanted to increase your HDL, you still wouldn't know how much to take to just increase the good cholesterol. You would also be increasing the bad cholesterol.
There are all types of coconut oils being promoted out there. I mean, there's partially hydrogenated, this cold-pressed coconut oil, extra virgin coconut oil. Is any one of these better than the other?
No, it will still boil down to the amount of saturated fat that is in the coconut oil, which is about 90% of it is saturated fat.
Would you be better off eating whole coconut?
Yes, you could eat coconut, you know, as a snack, a small amount mm-hmm. would be fine.
How about coconut butter? Is that a better choice?
That's still the saturated fat. It's still calories. It's nice for your skin and for your hair.
Uh-huh. So coconut oil is a cooking oil. Would you be better off choosing other forms of cooking oil?
Yes. Yes. One with less saturated fat. Yeah, and we want more of the monounsaturated fats than the saturated fat that blocks or causes our bad cholesterol to go up. We're looking at any from olive oil to canola oil would be, you know, good, heart healthy oils.
Sharon Cox, thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon Cox is a dietitian with Parkland Hospital System. That's a sound 22 years in the making. SMU fans cheering the announcement that their men's basketball team is headed back to the NCAA tournament. The Mustangs will take on UCLA Thursday in Louisville. Catherine Arata graduated in 1991. She sweated out SMU's win over Connecticut in the American Conference tournament yesterday, the win that clinched the NCAA berth.
It feels like a vindication. We played really hard all year. These guys have been an amazing team. They've done a great job playing together. Glad we're going to go and take on UCLA in the first round.
Coaching legend Larry Brown has turned the program around in just 3 years. After yesterday's game, Brown told the Mustang Radio Network it was a moment to savor.
I'm going to enjoy celebrating this championship with our school because it's been a long time and so thankful to be part of all this.
Hardcore fans like SMU junior John Brigenet vowed not to miss Thursday's NCAA return, even if it means missing class.
I might have to. I mean, I'm a good student. It's not every time that you get this. Like, I mean, we're in college for 4 years, and it doesn't happen very often.
There may be a few class absences, though, that Thursday afternoon. The SMU-UCLA game will begin at 2:10. Partly sunny skies and a high of 75 in the forecast. The overnight low drops to 60, and then tomorrow, partly sunny once again with a 20% chance of afternoon rain. Look for a high around 77. It's 52 degrees now in Dallas, 53 in Fort Worth. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker.